Hello, hello, everyone. Now we're on to part four of the audios. And let's see, you guys have such interesting questions. We might need to go to like part 25. But let's see what we can do here. So one community member writes in, I've been at this consistently for about 4 years now. I'm 26, and I'm still struggling to lose the weight. I give myself regular colonics with a Liberator and enemas when in a pinch. I've gone through periods on 3-week juice cleanses and several months of EGD, for example, where it was a colonic each day, but at this point, it is usually 2 to 3 times per week and never less than once a week. I'm consistent with a green-centric diet, though I feel like I'm always tinkering within it to find my sweet spot. I definitely feel lighter spiritually, emotionally, and physically in terms of mood, energy level, and overall outlook on life. I know that this is the work I'm meant to be doing, but for some reason, my body is still holding. I definitely do have physical weight to lose, so know that this question does not come from some disordered attempt on my part to squeeze my body into someone else's image of who I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to look like. Rather, this is all coming from a place of inner knowing that I'm far from where I want to be and who I am meant to be. Other than just stick with it or be patient, both of which I 100% intend to do, as I have been, do you have any advice or hope to offer me? That is such an amazing question. It's okay. So let me just sit with this for a second. there's a lot of things going on here. First of all, it's a different times in life. Sometimes the body just holds on to weight. It can happen that way. Usually it's later in life. Sometimes it's, you know, before the kids sort of lose their, that sort of that term baby fat, it can definitely apply in many cases. And I use that, you know, in the sweetest way. But it sounds to me like it's lineage, right? So we've got the way the, not just the ancestral chain was living, but their actual shape and how they were presenting, let's say, physiologically presenting. So that can sometimes be an impediment. And it can also be emotional. It can be a kind of an inability to let go, and that of something that's in the, you know, in the subconscious or unconscious, and the recapitulation work on the emotional level is extremely valuable for that. You know, if it's a true blue scenario of no sweets other than stevia used to sweeten, no fruits. Green-centric, has applied the pathogen annihilators, meaning the EGD approach, which it sounds like she has. I can't imagine it's anything other than lineage and emotions. So, you know, it's, again, as she says rightly, like she intends to stick with it, and she intends to, you know, but the hope is absolute. I mean, I've seen people go through stages where things wouldn't budge and suddenly everything would be released. Same thing with the periods, that, you know, as they would transition, they would lose their periods for a couple of years, and they would just, you know, maintain that understanding of the natural law process and keep the faith, as it were. And the periods would come back with the most incredible regularity and lightness and uneventfulness, as we've discussed before, which is ideal. So, yeah, I mean, there's the other thing I will say, and so there's the emotional aspect, which is really big, and seeing what you could be holding and why, that's very big. But what was the other thing I was going to say? It's that sometimes it does require doing things differently. So if something isn't working for somebody, they mustn't do it. Now, I understand this case. This is working for this individual, and she's feeling wonderful and everything. And I remember the times that weight was always my problem. And people don't believe it when they see me now, because they're like, oh, you must have always been that way. It must be so. You're just naturally thin. No, actually, no. It's only because of this work that I have the physique I have. But, you know, but if the lineage is an issue, which it always is, and things are being done too well, then sometimes the body is holding, because it just, it's in a hyperattentive state of cleansing. It just cannot get to the deeper matter. So that's one thought. It's just actually to ease up, to back off the super, super clean regimen, because maybe your body's saying it's too much. It's keeping it from actually releasing. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but that can happen. If you're going to back off it, don't back off with anything other than, because there's so many things you can integrate that's just going to completely ruin the process. But back off with free-range eggs, meaning incorporate something like free-range omelets. Don't do the starches. Don't go that route. Don't do the sugars. Don't anything like that. But the clean, concentrated proteins. I say concentrated protein because amino acids, of course, are the building blocks of proteins, are in the greens that we eat. So there's so much protein there. But concentrated, meaning animal protein, nut proteins. I just don't recommend the nut proteins and seed proteins so much because they're very hard to digest as well. But if you do, if you take something that is an imperfect substance that does not, however, feed pathogens and that is not so hard to digest, and it's well combined and it's cooked in such a way that it doesn't dry it out. So moist omelets, don't overcook them. If you want to do a little bit of sashimi or seared fish, really get the best quality you can. I know it's a mess out there in the oceans. But that sort of thing, to just, you know, to back off a little on the, keep it green-centric with these things. So just doesn't make the body have to be so paralyzed, if you will, from a cleansing standpoint, like, you know, everything you're putting in me is asking me to awaken, and I'm in a constant state of awakening, and even though I'm getting colonics and stuff, it's just too much. So the body could just be just like saying, please, this is like just too much for me. And if this resonates, run with it. Give it a chance. Don't do a lot of the bottom grubbers, though, like the prawns and lobsters and all that stuff, because that's going to feed pathogens, because it's full of the crapola in the ocean that's going in there. It's a whole different level. In fact, I found when I used to indulge in shellfish, sometimes I would just feel like I was tasting the rubbish. And so that quickly went off that. But many, many years ago, I can't imagine what it's like now. But the best quality fish, keep it moist. Everything being as juicy and digestible as possible. Remember that the higher the water content, the easier something is going to be to digest. The more water that is removed from it, the more impossible it's going to be to digest, and the more inclined it's going to be your impaction later, which your impaction equals your aging, your impaction equals your depression, your impaction equals your lack of vitality on every level. So keep it moist. Keep it juicy, ladies and gentlemen. So just think about those things, lineage, emotions, and backing off a little bit. When something's not working, change it. Changing things up is so important. So many times I've witnessed people just like nose firmly to grindstone doing something that obviously wasn't having any results for them. And no, we have a visitor. Yes, Duca, I know, I fed you. I think he wants to give this talk rather than me. All right, so let's go to the next question. I hope that was helpful. Okay. I had a question about peanut butter in regards to food combining. I know it should generally be avoided since it's so mucus forming, but if it's going to be used as an occasional treat, does peanut butter combine with starches since peanuts are legumes, or does it combine with nuts, dried fruits? Well, as this individual suggests, peanuts really should not be on the menu. So it's hard to even speak to them because they are one of those items, the ingredients that I just would completely keep out of the stratosphere of your world. They are full of these mycotoxins. They are so hard to digest. They're so mucus forming, all the things that this individual knows, as she said. But if you're going to do them, you would do them with nuts, as nuts, dried fruit. They are, yes, they're a starchy legume. Which is, you know, they're like the, they're a starchy nut, basically, which makes them impossible to digest. So, I mean, I would say do it at your own risk. I really, really wouldn't recommend it. But if you're going to go in one direction, if you're going to, as you know, she says, if I'm going to like lean one way, lean nuts, dried fruit combination. Okay, I also want to know if cold-pressed juices are as beneficial as making fresh juices. Okay, well, cold-pressed juices are, because they're pressed cold and not heated, you have the centripetal energy in them that's going to make them last a lot longer. They're not going to oxygenate as quickly. So they if you're going to consume a cold-pressed juice in the first 2 days, 3 days of the outside, 4 days of the very outside, if it's only green, if there's no fruit. The more fruit that's in the juice, the quicker. Like if it's a green juice with apple, it's going to last longer. It's going to not last as long as a plain green juice will. But having said that, the fresh juice, if you mean fresh juice as in the centrifugal juicers, there that you can look, you can make a cold pressed juice and drink it on the spot, which is obviously the best choice of all. Alternatively, you can do a cold pressed juice and it can sit for a couple of days and it's still going to have a lot of enzymatic integrity, which is what you want, a lot of life force. If you do a centrifugal, like the Breville's and most of the juicers that people use, other than the non-twin blade masticating, the non-cold pressed, home juicers, if you're using one of those, the high speed ones, then and you have it right away, you're gonna be fine. I use them all the time, and my Breville at home is the one I use, and I just put the vegetables right through the moment before I drink it. I drink it, I'm done. And there's a huge amount of vitality. How do I know this? I know this because when your system is empty and you've been dry fasting, and you take in the vegetable juice, you get this immediate surge, like you've just been plugged into an electrical current. And if the juice was dead, that wouldn't happen. And it's not just the hydration, because I'm very hydrated, because I hydrate where the hydration is necessary. And we talked about that last time. So yes, hopefully that is helpful. So they're both great, and you'll get the people that will argue that the centrifugal juicers heat the juice and all that. It will to a certain degree, but not enough to make it. If it's convenient for you to make the juice in your centrifugal juicer, and you're going to juice it as quickly after making it as possible, you're going to benefit from that juice. And at the end of the day, it's the big picture of everything you do. So if someone is properly food combining, if they're green centric and they're using a centrifugal juicer, they're still going to be way, 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 way better off. And getting way more from their green juice because it's actually getting to the cells and tissues because it's not obstructed by all this, this stuff that's impacting the body, than somebody who's religiously and carefully, meticulously using their cold press, twin blade masticating, yada yada, and then not ideally food combining, not cleansing the colon, not doing any of these other things. The juice isn't going to make any difference. So that's kind of the way you want to think about it. So it's not ideal to use centrifugal, but it's also really useful. People love black and white answers. And you guys know when you ask me a question, you rarely get a black and white answer, except maybe with peanuts. That was a pretty black and white answer. There's all these nuances. There's all these considerations to put into take into consider to take into consideration. So, you got to be able to bend your mind around them and see, well, okay, if I'm doing this, this, and this, then this is okay. All right, next question. Okay. My kids are not vaccinated, and we are traveling to Africa, to Tanzania, for a family safari. Is it necessary to vaccinate them for this trip? Everyone is scaring me. I'm pretty sure that I can take my essential oils to help, but would love backup and words of wisdom if appropriate. People are so scared of Africa in America. It's crazy. I mean, my kids' friends, I mean, yeah, my kids' friends were just like freaking out when we were moving here, saying that they're all going to die of Ebola. And, there's so many rumors, and it's so much miseducation. On the other hand, there is malaria and there are ish things that do come up. But you want to know, are you going in the wet season or the dry season? I don't know about Tanzania in terms of malaria, if that's what you're concerned about. I'm assuming that's what you're thinking of. In terms of other things, if there's no, we go to darkest Africa. We've been to all over the place. We go to Zimbabwe. We don't take things. We go to places during seasons where you can catch malaria and or catch it, you know, it's coming from the mosquitoes, but and we don't, and I would never vaccinate myself or my kids. You know, if one of my older children was really scared and they told me they really wanted it, and I told them the reasons that I would prefer they didn't have it and all of that, and they really wanted it, I mean, I'm not gonna say no, but if, you know, it's, you know, certain age people need to make choices for themselves. But I'm not gonna say yes or no. I'm just gonna say that don't let the fear get to you. You know, you could talk to your doctor, go over all the options, but definitely take your essential oils with you. And what I do with the malaria concern is I always take plenty of tea tree and you know, to make sure that I don't get bitten and the kids don't get bitten, my husband doesn't get bitten in the first place. And usually there'll be nets over the beds and stuff if you're in a malaria region. And then take the artemisinin, the wormwood, which is what's used for malaria prevention and for malaria what's the word? Remediation. Anyway, so it's, you know, it's the perfect thing to take with you. The artemisinin, it's wormwood. It goes by two names, artemisinin and wormwood. So that's used anyway, and I always have those two things with me. And yeah, so those are my words of wisdom as a fellow American living and exploring Africa, living in and exploring Africa. All right. Next question. Okay, I've been following Natalia's work for years and absolutely love it. I go back and forth with researching the best way to eat and go back and forth for her knowledge and recommendations as for plant-based. I live in Chicago, I tend to want warm foods all day and would love some day-to-day ideas of what to eat based on seasons and foods. Okay, well, I mean, sure. Let's think about this for a sec. There's you know, living with the seasons as one does in that part of the world, it's really just a matter of tuning in to what's, you know, what's appealing and what's fresh and running with that. So, you know, in terms of, geez, you want warm foods all day. You know, there's such a world of warm foods. If you know, we're not gonna don't think in terms of raw anyway, because that's not the philosophy here. Raw foods in the right context play a strong role, but you know, you've got all your hot teas, you've got all your broths, your consommés, you've got all your vegetable centric soups, you know, based in vegetable broth. You've got all your baked vegetables you could possibly dream of. Even just taking a big bunch of baby spinach and putting it into a hot bowl of vegetable broth and letting it wilt and having like a kind of a spinach consomme is delicious. There's so many things you could do. If you think vegetable centric, you're going to be fine. If you think plant based, you can get in a little trouble because plant-based implies also the grains and the nuts and a lot of other things, soys and things that, you know, we wouldn't really want to incorporate. But definitely knock yourself out with lots of hot, piping hot, steaming vegetables with as soups, with marinara sauce, with some goat cheese on top. It's as endless as the vegetables in the market, or the vegetables in your garden, or the vegetables, you know, that you can get from the co-op, wherever you're going for your vegetables. You have all the winter squashes. When you're now in spring, I'm moving to winter. You guys are in spring, summer. There's spaghetti squash. You can take the spiralizers and, or even just use a carrot peeler and peel your favorite vegetables into beautiful ribbons, and then put them into a hot broth, or warm them or cook them a little bit so they're soft like spaghetti. So much, it's truly endless. And for me, my favorite thing in the world is are my roasted beets, which I have every night. The baked beets, which we put in the oven in sort of mid-afternoon, and they're ready at dinner time. And another favorite of mine is just to take carrots. So I cut them into sort of coins, about, I don't know, maybe a couple centimeters thick, and just put them into hot water for a few minutes, get them nice and soft, and I put them into my salad. So it just kind of warms the salad. It brings another kind of dimension, another flavor to the salad, another kind of energy. And it tastes warm and it's hearty and it's like kind of a comfort food salad. So you might try that or any vegetable you like. It's great with steamed broccoli. You can put hot spinach into a raw green salad with goat cheese. That's also delicious, one of my favorites. So just think in terms of warm vegetables as soups, as baked, lightly steamed, however you want to do it. But the vegetable-centric idea is where you want to go, and just don't limit yourself. There's so and also think about every flavor. So you've got, your Italian take on it. You've got your Thai take on it. You've got your Mexican take on it. You've got every possible rendition. In fact, when my family used to love to go to that steakhouse, what is it? What's it called? It's sort of a chain. Hillstones. It used to be called Houston's, and then it became Hillstones. And we used to love to go there, like once every 2 weeks. There's one in New York City on 53rd Street and 3rd Avenue. And I used to just love their, even though it's not the best thing in the world, but it's their barbecue sauce. I would never buy it and have it at home, but when we would go, I would order my salad. I'd bring my own greens and stuff because, I get kind of a dinky salad, but I asked for a big plate with a salad on it, and I'd add my organic greens and my goat cheese and all the little things I do, a little lemon juice and stevia, and a side of spinach, and I would, or a side of whatever vegetable they had. Maybe it was a steamed broccoli or something. Actually, they did great broccoli spears. And I'd take a little bit of the barbecue sauce and put it into the salad, or dip my carrots into the barbecue sauce. The barbecue sauce is not ideal. It has, like corn syrup, I'm sure, in it. It's from Hillstone. It's not going to be stevia or even agave or even coconut sugar. But it didn't matter because it was so little. And in the big scheme of things, the way I live, it was inconsequential, especially once every 2 weeks or however often we would go. So there's that barbecue style take. Now, you could make a much better, super high integrity barbecue sauce. You use your organic tomatoes, use your version of a sweetener, and you make it really, really clean. But the point is, you could take this clean concept of vegetable-centric warm foods and apply it to every flavor out there. And now you know my little secret. Okay, the next question I'm going to abbreviate slightly, just in the interest of getting to a couple of other things I want to address. And that question comes in from someone who is going to Tokyo and wants to know about how to eat while there. I confess, I've not traveled to Tokyo. I haven't been to Japan. I haven't been to the Far East. All I can say to that, because this person is interested in what to do about the grains and that sort of thing, is just try and be as careful as you can with your food combining. So, having not been there myself, even though I hear the food is so fresh and so beautifully presented, it's still a matter of, well, what are you combining and what are you actually consuming? So, if you want to have sushi, sashimi, and then do that with vegetables. If you want to do avocado, do that with vegetables. Don't do the avocado with the fish. And of course, with the exception of buckwheat noodles, which is soba, I would avoid the grains. So, unless, if you wanted to really live large and occasionally have a brown rice vegetable sushi, that would be okay too. But depending on where you are in the grand scheme of things. So if you're a beginner and you're doing vegetable sushi with brown rice, that's great. If you're more advanced and you're backtracking to brown rice, that's not going to be so great for you. But remember that buckwheat, quinoa, millet, teff, amaranth, these grains are really clean relative to other grains. And so if you wanted to do some soba noodle soups and that sort of thing, I believe those are on offer in Japan. So maybe that's something to think about, the big brothy soups. Watch out for the commercialized restaurants though, because they're probably going to use food coloring and the cheap ingredients. So if you're having a seaweed salad that's authentically seaweed, that's great. If you're having a seaweed salad that has sugar and food coloring in it, then that's not the same thing. Okay? So just keep that in mind and have a wonderful trip. Okay, so we're going to get to a few new things now, which I'm really excited to talk to you about. A couple of questions came up more from a local standpoint, friends and family discussions, and I thought I would just consolidate a few of them for you all because I think they're really interesting concepts. I find them interesting, so I'm hoping that they'll translate well. Okay, so one thing that came up is I was speaking with somebody about acidity and alkalinity because everyone seems to have that repertoire down now. They really understand what acidity and alkalinity is. At least they understand the terms. And so, you know, they'll ask me, well, what's the best way to test your acidity? And, you know, is it better with saliva? Is it better with a urine sample? All of these things. But the bottom line, and I want you to think about this very carefully, because this is an amazing lesson in how the body works and where people tend to go wrong with trying to set themselves straight on the holistic path. It's not about whether you check litmus paper in your saliva or in your urine stream to determine your acidity or alkalinity. All you have to do is determine your acidity level is ask yourself the simple question, do I have symptoms? Symptoms do not appear if you are not acidic. So, if you have headaches, if you get colds and flus, if you have joint pains, if you have bladder infections, that's of course one of the biggest ones that comes up because that the kidneys are the detectors of acidity. So they're first and foremost going to indicate to you. So especially as women, that's the thing to look out for. If you have niggling symptoms or if you have really big symptoms, that will indicate to you whether you are acidic. So somebody who is truly alkaline, it's very, very simple. They will be asymptomatic, predictably asymptomatic. I never get a headache. You know, it's funny because everyone around me is always here. There's this headache powder stuff that actually has codeine in it that everyone's obsessed with. It doesn't sell in America. I think it wouldn't be legal in America. But anyway, the fact is everyone's constantly taking medication for headaches. Whether they're just the you know the odd headache from being out too late or it's a chronic migraine situation, everyone has headaches. People get sick several times a year. People have get pimples all the time wherever they are in their body. People have breakouts on their backs. You know this. I mean, I'm just like indicating these pointing out some of these symptoms that will tell you whether you're acidic. And if you have symptoms, your body is acidic. The degree to which you have symptoms is the degree to which you're acidic. But you want to get to a point where you're predictably and consistently asymptomatic. Asymptomatic meaning without symptoms. And that will tell you. And then, you know, there's this state of being consistently alkaline and knowing you are without having to test yourself. And then you deepen that. It's not that you deepen the number on the litmus paper that you become more alkaline in that sense. Because when you see that extreme, when you go, you know, north of 7.4 and you become too alkaline, that's actually also acidity. That's your body trying to balance out something. So it's not being better. You're not better off if you are, you know, seeing those numbers increase. What will happen is you will deepen your well-being, which means that the centripetal spin of your atoms is going to increase, which means you're going to feel more. You're going to have more vitality. You're going to have your heart's going to be swelling with or pulsating with more love energy. You're going to have way more creativity. You're going to feel that visceral hum I talk a lot about. So it's not that there's an end point when you reach, you know, so your blood chemistry isn't needing to pull from your bones and all this to maintain its homeostasis at 7.4 alkalinity. It's not that it's going to go beyond that. It's that when you get to that state and then you hold that, your body has a chance to start. How can I put this? It starts to do this healing of the spin in your body. This is very, very exciting. So say you reach a point of alkalinity and you aren't draining your bones for their alkalinity anymore because your blood can't dip. It has to draw. So it's going to draw from the alkaline stores in your body, which is why there's such an epidemic of osteoporosis in our modern world. So it's going to draw from the teeth. It's going to draw from the skull. It's going to draw from anywhere it can get the alkaline matter that it needs to maintain its 7.4 index for homeostasis in the blood. So once you reach that point, you're not draining the body anymore, but you're consistently giving it this high integrity, high vibration, meaning correctly spinning, centripetal force, food and air and feeling, because emotion has as much to do with it as anything else, it can start to rectify the spin in all of your atoms. So that's what starts to happen. And that's where you pick up your health. It's not from, driving the alkalinity concept so much. In a sense, they're obviously connected because you're putting alkalinity into your bank account and, your proverbial bank account, because your body needs these alkaline reserves, because we're interfacing with a world that is, full of acidity. So you need to constantly have this alkaline reserve to spend, to neutralize and maintain your new high vibration state, or your increasingly high vibration state. But your body's ability to start, it's a transformational process. It's the ability you will have to start triggering the proper spin, the centripetal spin of your atoms, which were previously largely spinning centrifugally. This is free radical damage. This is cancer. This is all the stuff that the mucus in the body. It's the inharmonious frequencies. It's all of that. That's all causing the centrifugal spin, which is not supposed to happen in the human body. It was never meant to happen in the human body. You are meant to be a centripetally spinning being. So all your atoms should be centripetally spinning. And that's when, the more we increase that, the more we start to realize what the human potential actually is. And the light quotient increases as you do that on every level. So if you'd like to think in terms of chakras, then you can think of the spin in all your chakras, because chakras are actually wheels and you want them to be properly spinning. So it all really connects when you think of it that way. But really, think, if you want to take it apart, you can, but take it apart only if you're going to see the whole as well. So you have your assemblage point, the giant sphere that you are, basically all the little parts, when they're properly spinning, they connect to their bigger wheels, and their bigger wheels, and you have the giant sphere, the giant orb that you are, and that becomes all the little parts of the little lights light up the big light, if you will, and they're all part of it. And the big light needs the little lights, and the little lights, make the big light happen. But so that's what's happening. It's so exciting. So this question, am I acidic? How do I tell? Is part of this trail to the much more exciting idea of what we are and what we can become. So it's there's never an end point, because there's so much to rectify. There's so much centrifugally spinning stuff in us that still has yet to be centripetally rectified. So wait and see what happens as you do that. And that should be your motivation. That should be like the unquenchable desire, is just keep on increasing that, because that's when you get your power. That's when the world, and all it's, when I say the world, like in quotes, right? The world, mother culture. If you've read Ishmael, you'll understand what mother culture is. If you haven't read Ishmael, you must read Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. That's when mother culture stops having any hold on us, because you become completely sovereign. You don't have outside needs. And the more we get that spin happening, the more we just have this, we walk around with this bliss. We're constantly inspired. We have so much to give. And this is another conversation I had recently with someone, this idea of being selfish, spending time on yourself. When you do the right things for yourself, when you're in your center, when your self is centered, rather than being selfish, which is like the little you, the little needy you that, needs attention, needs gratification, needs all the things that the little you uniquely needs, because each one of our little yous, our little selves needs, something different to the other, because our inner child and all this stuff that goes on in our primal conditioning, it's that's a whole other conversation. But this being centered in the self, if you do the things that keep you centered in the self, you have so much to give. The way I kind of think about it, especially with the three kids and my husband and the household, and we have quite an, I'd say, fairly elaborate setup here, because we have, we're on 4 acres, and we have a big house, and we've got the kids, and we've got them in 3 different schools. And, you know, between making sure that we're, like, everything, all the wheels are turning, you know, 4 cars, 3 schools, 3 kids, the plot of land, the all the things that, that go on here, is I just take my time in the morning, I do the things I need to do for me, and then I can just give. I can give, and I can give, and I can give, and I can give with joy, because I have so much to give. And whether it's, you know, being happy in the car, picking my kids up from school, or making dinner, or do whatever it is, it's like, it's fine. I'm happy. I've got things to, I've got something to give, because I'm full, because my atoms are centripetally spinning. I know my life is only going to be better every day, because there is more light I'm accessing. I know that I can conduct something of use to my family, even though it's a little alternative. It's not what some of the other mothers are out there doing, and I commend them. You know, if they're baking cookies for school, and they're signing up for school trips and doing all this stuff, I honestly, I just cannot get my head around that. So it's fantastic they can do that. It's just not my calling, and I don't believe we should do things that, you know, make us miserable unless we actually have to do them. So I don't really sign up for that sort of thing. I did it more when my big kids were little, but now that the little ones have grown and I've got the little tag along 4-year-old, I just, you know, you can't get me to those things anymore. But I still have so much to give. And sometimes when we do what we think we're supposed to do, we get so drained. And if we're not conducting, if we have nothing, if we just feel like sad because of what we're doing, we're expending our energy. It's actually a centrifugal process. So doing things that you greatly dislike, being in a job you hate, being engaging with people that you just don't enjoy, that's all centrifugal. Now, if you have to do it for some reason, just take ownership of that and find enough things in your life that you can neutralize that with. At least neutralize it. Best case scenario, of course, is you know, have enough that's so much, so amazing and so centripetally exciting and inspiring for you that, you know, you have dividends at the end. You have, you know, something in your inspiration bank account, in your centripetal bank account in terms of your emotions. But, you know, don't do things you don't love, if you can avoid it. And if you do have to do things you don't love, then find ways to neutralize it. You have to get to a point where you are centered in yourself, and you have, you're doing the things you need to do that aren't selfish, but enable you to be in your center so that you can give, and you will give so much more than you could possibly imagine being able to give. But you know, if you can't access that, and sometimes it means you have to have a nap, or you'd have to, you know, whatever it is for you that you need to organize in your life, to be in your center. And you might need to do that for a while before you feel like you have that much to give. I mean, I'm talking about having done this work for 17, 18 years now. It's like, ain't no stopping us now, right? It's like, there's nobody that is going to tell me that something I'm doing is not putting me in my center, or that something I'm doing is selfish, or that there's no voice out there that's going to stop me from doing what I know is true, because I've had the fruits speak for themselves. There's to my mind only one way to live this life, and that is to be in a centripetal spin. However you do that, there are many ways to get into the centripetal spin. I'm not saying that, like, you do everything my way. Absolutely not. I mean, most people wouldn't enjoy the things I enjoy, and they must do the things they enjoy. But life is centripetal. So to say there's one way to live is true. There is to be centripetally spinning is to be living, to be centrifugal. Any of those things that are in the centrifugal category are going to be life depleting. So they're not the way to live, they're the way to die. All right, that's enough on that. So how did we get there? Being centered in the self. So find the ways you need to be centered in the self. Now, next thing I want to talk about is weight and weight loss. So I had another interesting conversation recently. A lot of young girls in my life, because I have a daughter who's turning 16 this year, and her friends kind of range between 14 and 17. And so the weight conversation comes up a lot, and they're all beautiful girls, and, you know, they actually have gorgeous figures. Often they'll talk about their mothers and how it bothers them. Their mothers have had such issues around food. And, you know, and so, you know, they're getting to the point where they're starting to want to control their own girth and all of that. And they look to their mothers and they look to the other women in their lives. And, you know, one of the big messages I try to communicate to them is to not think about their weight per se, but to think about their organs. Because if they're fatiguing their organs, then the weight gain that comes with that, the expansion of the waistline, the you know, gluteus maximus, all the expansion of the body that we see as maybe putting on weight, that we call putting on weight, is going to be a result of them fatiguing their organs. Now, some people drop a lot of weight when their organs are fatigued, but that's usually when they're very, very sick, when it's already gotten past the point. So, you know, when it's an autoimmune disorder, when it, you know, these sorts of things. But if they're going to consume and be exposed to things, they're going to exhaust their organs. Their organs aren't going to be able to keep up with the processing, with the metabolization, and the that which that organ function is designed to do. Then you're going to get the backup, and the fatigued organs is going to cause them to deteriorate, whether that's expansion of the body, or it's breaking out on the face, or losing hair, or having, you know, weak nails and bad skin. Those are all the result of weakening the organs. So I'm hoping some of this, you know, kind of gets through, and they don't fixate on their weight, but they start to think about, well, what I'm putting into my body, is this going to fatigue my organs? And this may be helpful to a lot of you to think about it, things in these terms. Because if you can regenerate your organs, you will lose weight. You will have beautiful skin. You will have gorgeous hair. You will have great strong nails. It's that which people forget about, what's under the skin and you know, in the bone marrow and in the organs and what the organs are made up of. And, you know, you don't need to be a doctor to understand, to kind of see into your body. If you really want to and you want to understand it, you can go on that inner journey and you can understand what, you know, what each organ does and why it might become fatigued by living, quote, normally. So I thought that was something that could be helpful. All right. And then I want to talk about wrinkles, skin wrinkles. Okay, so I'm turning 41 this year, and I still don't have any wrinkles. And I'm not saying that to be boastful. I'm saying that because I want to. I'm on like a lifetime. An experiment, and I'm experimenting on myself. So I suppose it's harmless. And the experiment's going pretty well, I have to say. So I want you to think about raisins, and why are they wrinkled? They're wrinkled because they're dry. However, this takes us into the conversation of tissue irrigation and organism irrigation. Irrigation of your organism is, other than oxygenation, is of equal or next to equal value. If you want to stay young and beautiful, you have to be hydrated. However, you cannot, and I know I've said this many, many times, but I'll say it again, it's not about the water that's taken orally. If that were true, if taking water orally would hydrate you so you did not become a raisin, so you do not wrinkle, then most people wouldn't be so wrinkly. They're wrinkly because their innards are dry. So if your intestine is dry and if your organs are struggling to get water, not because you're not drinking enough through the mouth, but because there's so much dry encrusted matter in your body, and all the water that goes into you gets taken up by that anyway, you're never going to go from a raisin to a grape. And the best thing is not to even become the raisin to begin with. So those of you who haven't turned into a raisin yet, listen up, it's even better news for you. Same thing with the injections of the hyaluronic acid. This is my theory. I believe that we encourage, we stimulate, or at least we maintain the ability for the body to produce its own hyaluronic acid, which is the body's moisture, when we both prevent the internal intestinal dryness and we rectify it by removing that which is intestinally dry, and we get it out, and then we keep the system hydrated. So you know, we can't think about what we were like. We can think about it. We were like more than 10,000 years ago before we had the agricultural revolution and we started eating all this dry food, non-water containing plant food, grains, all this stuff. But we can't say, well, we don't need to hydrate the colon now because we weren't meant to do that when, you know, as the origin of our species. Everything's different now. We've got the lineage issue. We've got the stuff that's come into our body in the last however long you've been on this planet. It is dry and impacted. And if you do not hydrate your body in the right place and make sure you are fully lubricated, meaning you're not like walking around with dry caked on matter in your body, you will wrinkle, and it's just all going to show. So your face is the reflection. I've written about this, you know, in Forever Beautiful and probably in other places too. Your face is always going to be a reflection of your organs. So we talked about fatigued organs. You're also going to have enlarged organs, because if they're overworked, they're enlarged. You're going to have necrotic tissue in your organs if you've got cancer in any of them, if you have tumors. So that's dead flesh, which spreads, which is why, you know, once you become certain stages of cancer, it becomes so dangerous. The amount of necrotic tissue overtakes the healthy tissue, and the war is lost. So all of these things come from the dry matter that's literally wasting you away. It's the waste, and it's eating you alive. Okay, I'm not going to make it any more sort of sweet sounding than that, because that's what's happening. And so people want to, they'll inject their faces with the Restylane and the hyaluronic acid blends. And it's not going to do the trick. It's going to temporarily give you a look. It's not going to make your organs any less fatigued or dry or inflamed or necrotic. It's just going to make your cheeks look plump. Okay, so you'll have a facade, but you're still decaying from within. I've said this twice. There's only one way. I'm said the most open-minded person ever, as I'm sure you can probably tell. But at the same time, sometimes I say there's only one way, and when I say that, it's because it's just to align yourself with nature. We have to have if you've read the Seen Gospel of Peace, I don't often refer to this because I think sometimes the raw foodists can get a little bit too crazy on that book, and you can, like anything, Bible verses and stuff, things can get misguided. But they talk about the angel of water, the angel of the air, the angel of the earth, the angel of fire. And what these angels are is they're the elements. So we need to make sure that we are, that our water constitution is what it needs to be. Not by drinking water, by eating your water, meaning eating water-containing plant foods and hydrating the colon, and by drinking your food, meaning your green juice is your intense nourishment, and you have enough of that water content. This is also fascinating. I know I'm going on a bit long here, but I think this is pretty special stuff. You know, we talk about being 70% water. Well, that depends on how old you are and how dehydrated you are. There, as you get older, your water quotient, your drops. So if we're talking about, you know, 70% water, we're talking about a child, you know, a newborn baby. Not even a child, newborn baby. And then for, you know, after 30, 40, 50, much sooner than that, but let's just say, that percentage is going to have dropped significantly. And that's going to show on the face because you go from the grape to the raisin. This all makes total sense when you think about it. But nobody talks about this because there's no, there's not a market for it. I mean, there is in the sense that people need this information, but it's not, this is the kind of stuff that it conflicts with all the stuff you can buy to try and fix things, when really the power is yours. It takes nothing. Even if you know, I of course have my home colonic unit that I invented, which I think is the invention of the millennium, but I have to be very careful about passing it around because of all these strongholds and things. But you can, for $7, go, or maybe it's 10 now, but some relatively nominal amount of money, go to a drugstore and get a colonic. Get an enema bag. And then you can eat your water and drink your food, and this is something that anybody in any demographic can do. So it becomes hugely empowering. There's nothing in your way except your own motivation. We do have to have an inner drive.
Like, the things that are worth doing do take effort. You have to overcome the fears, the community's messages, mother culture's whole projection. But what you gain is your freedom. You gain your health. You gain everything. I mean, no one and nothing. And I mean, even you get to yourself to a point. I've thought about this many times. Like, if I was left with nothing, if I was left in the prison cell, I would be all right. Emotionally, physiologically, I really think I'd be fine. Because I've got my head around, I've got my head and my body, my spirit in line with what is true, what is centripetal. And so, you know, what's the worst that can happen to you in that state? I mean, look, there are always unfortunate things that are going to happen to all of us, but you get to, it's like having your shield and your sword and your light and your, you just carry this power for good in your every atom. And that's sovereignty. That's total sovereignty. And you know that you can be self-guided. You know that you can make good decisions if you hold them all up to that. You know, and you might not talk about it to everybody. You may quietly do it. You might not be ready to do that. And I don't even like talking about it much because, frankly, it's not always a centripetal conversation. But I want to talk about it with you guys because I know you really hunger for the knowledge and you want to understand it. So you don't have to become a raisin. You can be a beautiful plump grape without injections, without all this stuff. You have to be hydrated properly, though. You have to have an irrigation system plan. You have to plan your own irrigation system for your body. Okay, that is just, if you can take that concept and run with it, you know, I don't know what the person next to you is doing about their irrigation system. You know, they might be busy about making sure their lawn looks really pretty and their petunias and their tulips are flowering. But, you know, the petunias and tulips that want to grow inside you, meaning your healthy flora, that they need your irrigation system to be focused on them. Okay. I think that kind of covers the bonus thoughts I wanted to include. I hope everyone is so happy and thriving, and we'll do more of these soon. We've got the vault that's going to be launching soon. Hopefully by the time you hear this, we'll just be days away. Finally, because it's been a long time coming. Okay, everyone, so much love to you and success in your pursuits and your creativity, your inspiration, just so much joy and love. I'm sure I'll speak to you again very soon. Bye for